Welcome to the Law Shit You Should Know podcast. We're here to talk a little bit about the law
and a whole lot about nothing. Every week, we have a new guest to discuss current events, legal drama, and dive even deeper into
the Law Shit You Should Know. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Law Shit You Should Know with Alina Santana
and Leslie Marenko.
And today, we have the amazing Daniel Layton with us. Hi, Dan.
Hi, everyone. Nice to meet you.
Dan, why don't you tell everyone what you do?
I am a civil litigator, a partner with a firm called Kravitz, Talamo & Layton here in Coral Gables. I've been a practicing lawyer for, 25 years now.
Lies. Lies. You're not that old.
No, I'm as old as the hills. and the areas that I practice in are civil litigation, so disputes between business owners and corporate espionage, and fraud claims, and other civil litigation of that sort. And also I represent employers when they are sued for allegedly violating workplace laws. So
Always allegedly.
So if they're alleged to not be paying their employees properly, if they're alleged to have engaged in employment discrimination, if they're trying to enforce a non-compete, if they're trying to defend against the enforcement of a non-compete, if they're alleging the theft of trade secrets, all those things are kind of in the wheelhouse.
All those employee-employer messy
on things. The employment side.
On the employer side, yeah.
Works for the man.
Yeah.
You're a poor woman.
Corporate crony. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My heart lies. My heart politically lies elsewhere. But these guys pay pretty good. So. By the way, I love the setup here. I did not realize what this was going
to
be when I arrived today.
When I
first agreed to do this, it totally escaped me. Although I think it was on the invitation that it was going to be filmed. So as soon as I realized it was going to be filmed, I said, guys, I don't know what your audience is like, but I don't know why you'd want to film me and chase them away. I don't know why. So since I've been here, I've been trying to control
the hair.
Which is like a souffle, that's been in the oven a little bit too long. And I told them to use their best slimming filters to.
I think the one thing I didn't mention to you while we were prepping is that it's called Law Shit You Should Know and that cursing is encouraged.
Oh, thank God. I'm really glad to hear that.
So please,
actually,
let your freak flag fly. You
know? I'm really glad to hear that. And I've never done a podcast before, but I remember there's a television show called It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Mm.
And on the show, there's a brother and sister who are always bickering at each other. They own a bar together, and their dad, I guess, helps own the bar and operate the bar. So they're always bickering, and they're really funny when they're bickering, and their dad says, who's Danny DeVito on the show, and he says, he says, you guys are so funny together, you ought to do a podcast. And they say, great idea. So they set everything up just like you guys. They set everything up, they have the mics out, they put something behind them, all of a sudden the lights go out, the magnifying lights go on, they start the podcast, and they have nothing to say to each other.
No!
So they sit there dead air for like 3 or 4 minutes saying a lot or whatever. So I'm hoping it doesn't go like
that. Oh, doesn't happen here, Dan. No. We have
so much to say.
Happen here, Dan.
Well, good.
We have too much to
we
say.
We are Latin women. We I'm don't shut up.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk some law shit you should know, or at least
Absolutely.
Our podcast audience should know.
Absolutely.
And I think you mentioned the first topic I want to talk about, which is non-competes, because I happen to know that there is a proposed rule to get rid of non-competes.
Yeah.
So can you tell everybody what is non-compete and what is this rule? And then I'm going to ask your opinion, but go on.
So non-competes are contracts that employers use with their employees or with independent contractors, which say, essentially, you are being exposed to really sensitive information, to our bank of customers, to our proprietary data, and because of that, and because of the platform that we're going to give you working with us, we don't want you to go down the street and immediately start siphoning off our business by using the materials we've given you through this platform. So,
sure.
You know, you...
I've taught you all the shit you know.
Exactly.
You can't go use it somewhere else.
Right. So that's the basic idea behind a non-compete. I think the problem that some people have with non-competes is they are sometimes, remember, I work for the employers, sometimes...
They are sometimes
abused in the sense that sometimes an employer will give them to everybody. And I remember walking into a client's office who was under an audit from the Department of Labor, and the first person we see when we walk into the office is the receptionist. So all that person is doing is answering the phones, plugging the calls in, routing them to whoever the person is they're trying to reach, And I said, okay, well, let's start here. Does that person have, and as we're going through a checklist of things, I said, a non-compete. And the guy said, absolutely she does. Okay, well, I mean, you know.
For all the specialized knowledge.
Exactly, right. Like a non-compete would be like appropriately given to someone who is an engineer at Coca-Cola and has learned the formula that has been.
Kentucky Fried Chicken secret formula.
I didn't know they had a secret formula, but yes.
Dad. 12 divisions.
I didn't know this, but you don't know that Trump's indicted.
Didn't know
Trump's indicted. No, we just did a podcast with someone
else. She didn't know Trump had been indicted.
But she knows. But there's 12 ingredients in this.
That was the commercial in my childhood. Thank you very much. Okay, delicious Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Let me take
Leslie's original recipe. There's 12 herbs and spices.
Well, let me take Leslie's example. The person that has the secret guarded recipe for 12 spices in Kentucky Fried Chicken, the owners of KFC don't want that person going to, don't know what a
Popeye's.
Popeye's. Right. Popeye's.
Yeah. There's a story.
We're not going to tell the Popeye's.
And giving that information away. So what they do is they say, we're going to put a break on things. We're going to stop you. But that's like when the non-compete is being used appropriately. It's for a good purpose.
Right.
When it's used
They're like trade secrets.
Right? Yeah.
Kind of.
Although trade secrets is its own field besides that. Okay. You don't have to have a non-compete. You know, in other words, the person that learns the Coca-Cola formula, even if they don't have a non-compete, if they run down the street and they try to give it to Pepsi, they're still going to be liable.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that for sure, because...
But there's some common law theory.
Well, it's a trade secret.
Okay.
I mean, a company has trade secrets, and a non-competition agreement is like an extra layer, but you still can't go around giving away your company's trade secrets. You couldn't say, for example, well, I worked for Coca-Cola and found out their most sensitive formula for Coke, but I didn't sign the non-compete, so I'm going to go sell it to Pepsi.
Yeah.
That you can't do. But that's the basic framework.
Yay, boo.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it'd be profitable to try. But. The idea is you get someone to agree that because you're giving them a platform and exposure and information and data that is sensitive and they wouldn't have otherwise, that when they leave you, they have to take a cooling off period where they can't come around and compete against you within a certain period of time, within a certain region, depending on the business and so forth. Now, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has decided that is an abusive rule that is kind of stifling the economy. That the abuses associated with that rule are overriding the legitimate value of the rule.
Or the policy. Kind of. I'm going to ask your opinion in a moment.
Well,
I'm going to give it. But.
I'm going to dance around a little bit. So what they've done is they proposed a rule that would make non-competes essentially illegal. And not only would they invalidate the non-competes, they would tell employers where there's a non-compete in place now that they have a certain number of days to go back and tell the people that have the non-competes that they're no longer valid.
You're not even like grandfathered in. Okay, backdating the non-compete.
Right, and the thing is with an agency like the FTC. So the FTC is an agency; it gets its authority from Congress.
Sure.
So it makes these rules,
and it has an enforcement arm.
Exactly, but now when it creates a rule or proposes a rule, it has to put that rule out to the public. And then it has to invite comments because they want to say, look, we want to see the public's experience. We want people in the business sector and the employment sector to give us what they think about this. And so they got a lot of comments.
It's the rulemaking process. It happens in my world, too. This is how things start happening.
Yeah, well, I don't know how many comments are typical for a proposed rule, but this one got a lot of comments. I think like 27,000, 28,000 comments.
That's a lot.
And so the FTC...
That's a lot of public engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. The Chamber of Commerce was writing a lot of letters.
But this is very one-sided commentary. I mean, the receptionist isn't writing comments, guys.
No, but there are...
You see what I'm saying? These are businesses that are like, fuck you guys, I'm going to complain about this.
Yeah, there are advocacy groups on behalf of employees who have written... It's almost like an amicus.
That's adorable. Stephanie has an advocate.
Hold on, let me stop you. It's not just employees, though, right? I mean, there are people who are in non-compete agreements that maybe were an employee but went out and started a new business. So let's say that you have a Starbucks. You own a Starbucks. You don't own it. You're whatever.
You're a barista.
And you decide, I could do this. And I'm going to open my own coffee shop. And you sign a non-compete with Starbucks.
But then tomorrow you go open your little shop in the corner with your little, you know,
your coffee
club. Latte. Has your nothing to do with Starbucks, but you know, you have your own brand of coffee now, whatever fuck it is.
And you get a 27-page complaint.
That's correct.
A 75-page
And I was gonna say, and look here, guys. Listen, the guy in the corner is not stealing Starbucks' clients, okay? Starbucks' clients are gonna go to Starbucks. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no one's gonna steal those clients, right?
Yeah.
And Starbucks cannot legit. I mean, I cannot find it legitimate to Starbucks say that that is a competition that's taking away their business. I don't find it realistic. I mean, maybe if we're talking about Dunkin' versus Starbucks, then we're talking same level, right? But like, the guy in the corner. And so these people signed on competes, and from the other side, like, I agree that it stifles business, because that guy would never go out and, like, become an entrepreneur, which is good for our local economy.
You know, it's. I think it's a matter of... I agree. I think that the non-competes, by their nature, serve a useful purpose, but they can be abused. Look, I mean, there are instances where somebody says, I know this person that has left us didn't really have access to confidential information. I know this person that's left us doesn't really have any proprietary data. I know that they don't really have access to our secret contacts, but I want to decapitate them and put their head on a spear and put them out in front of the office as a warning to all the other employees. That does happen. And especially when it's just being used indiscriminately, that I think there's a reason to invalidate them. But there are legitimate reasons for non-competes. There are plenty of instances where somebody actually has access to serious information,
agreed.
And they might go across the street and use it. So, you know, if the FTC, reading all these 28,000 comments, decides to kind of take a middle ground and say maybe a presumptive argument against the legitimacy of a non-compete, but you can overcome the presumption by showing that this particular, you know, those things kind of exist in some form or fashion already, but you can strengthen them to some extent. Nobody knows where it's going to go. I mean, essentially, they were going to, the comment period closed in, I believe, March or April, and they were going to vote on the rule a few months after that. They have now kicked that decision out by a year. They're going to look at this in 2024.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, what's going to happen is, if they do invalidate non-competes in private sector settings the way they're proposing to do, then you're going to see a lot of constitutional challenges. You're going to see the Chamber of Commerce sue. And, you know, what they're going to say is,
you don't have the authority to enact this bullshit in every state.
Exactly what they're going to say, Which is interesting, because it gets into an area that could be a very significant ruling for a lot of other areas.
Yeah.
In other words, not too many cases, from what I understand, challenge whether an agency has been delegated the necessary authority to enact certain rules. Most of the time we say, okay, the agency has been delegated this authority. Here, the Chamber of Commerce and some other advocacy groups would step forward and say, no, the FTC was never given the authority to adopt these kinds of rules, and it's possible that the Supreme Court eventually, which is going to hear this case, assuming it gets filed, may say, okay, yes, the FTC has overstepped its bounds, it wasn't really given the authority to do this, but now if it does that, it's going to have an impact not only on that decision, not only on the FTC, but on a whole range of other agency decisions. So, you know, it's kind of a case to watch for a whole variety of reasons. But I think the other point is that if the FTC eventually in 2024 goes ahead and adopts this rule or something close to it, it's going to be years before the matter is settled.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something to watch, because if you're an employer, look, if you're an employer and you want to get your employees to sign something that gives you some level of protection, there are other things you can do. You can have a non-solicitation agreement. You know, which says, it doesn't say that you can't compete against the employer, but it says you can't go poach the employer's clients, can't go poach the employer's employees and so forth. You can do other things. You can try to, rather than a non-compete, you can try to claw back the cost of training of the employee. There are creative things. It is vicious. There are some creative things that employers can consider doing, even if the rule is enacted. Now, whether those things will be exposed or argued as being illegitimate or overreaching or whatever, that's all to be decided. But, you know, what happens with these things inevitably is people start talking about them early and figuring out what they might do, and You know, this is going to go a lot of different places.
Is there any talk of, like, shifting attorney's fees and such? I mean, what it seems like the wage an hour, right?
Oh,
well,
yeah.
You aren't paid overtime, and now you have every shyster lawyer on the planet saying, my client is owed two additional hours, and I get my $1 million in fucking attorney's fees for going to trial.
Oh, God.
Right? Is there any of that?
You know what's funny is Leslie and Ellie warned me that you could go off the rails in this discussion, and that's, like,
right off the off-ramp.
Well, no, it's it is a legitimate question. Let me say this. Years ago, that you know, I warned you. There are two big buckets in what I'm going to call small employment law. And by small, I used to work at a firm called Proskauer Rhodes, which is like
a small little
no,
law
no, that's
firm.
Not what I meant.
Small little law firm.
Two attorneys, Proskauer Rhodes. Those guys do what I would call big law, big labor law, which is they defend management on a broad scale. So yes, they do individual cases, whatever. They also have everything up to collective bargaining agreements. But smaller employment law would be basically into two buckets. There's a few others, but it's wage and hour law, which is what you just mentioned, and there's employment discrimination. Those are the two. And employment discrimination is a heavy lift. I mean, you've got to prove a lot of things. Cases are not easily won by a plaintiff's attorney.
Right.
Sometimes it's hard to find the right person, if any, to take that case. We defend against a lot of those cases.
But that doesn't mean people don't try.
Well, no, people try. Wage and hour law, which is what Leslie just mentioned. Wage and hour law. That is a hopping area. And it's because the law is written in a way that heavily favors the employees. And so you get a lot of cases. Now, probably less now, because the labor market is really good. People have jobs. It's less likely they're going to lose a job and go sue the employer. But, you know, especially when the labor market is tight, it isn't so good, and people are losing their jobs and don't know that they're going to eventually be able to return. There are a ton of lawyers who will take those cases and specialize in those fields, because there are all these presumptions that are written into the law. And I mean, you can understand the reasons why. I mean, in the real workplace, the theory is the employer has most of the power. That's definitely true. You know, you will have employers that will collect all their employees together and stand over them and say, guys, I have overtime work to do this weekend, but I'm telling you right now, I do not intend to pay time and a half. If you want to do the work, we have the work for you, but this is all I'm going to do. Who wants to do the work? And of course, people raise their hands and do the work. So in the workplace, the employer has
Where
the power.
Where do I get those people? What are you talking about?
I'll see if I can find them for you.
I have yet to see
them. But now, in the workplace, the employer has a lot of power. When the employee leaves, now let's say the employee raises their hand and says, okay, I'll do that work. They do the work for the weekend. They get regular straight pay. They don't get time and a half. And then they leave the job the next day and they sue. Who wins? The employee every single time. Because now the law says that once you get away from the employer's inherent natural power in the workplace, we're gonna make sure that the law favors the employee and levels the playing field. And so there's also other things. You mentioned attorney's fees. That's exactly what it is. You as a plaintiff can win almost a small, de minimis amount. You know, you can win $1,000, $2,000, you will be entitled to your award of attorney's fees. The defendant, even if they hold you to essentially a zero verdict, if they prove they didn't fail to pay you what you were owed, they're not going to get their attorney's fees back. By the way, as a practical matter, they're not going to get their attorney's fees anyway, because it's hard to collect attorney's fees in that situation.
Right, yeah.
But you know, so you will have a situation where it is bad to begin with, and it just keeps getting worse if you're an employer. I think a lot, and the reason that you see a lot of law firms in that area is because it's almost like fish in a barrel. Because a lot of employers do it wrong, all the way up to law firms. A lot of employers do it wrong.
Sure.
And as soon as they do it wrong, somebody can jump in, make those arguments, and they just have to keep litigating. And you know, every hour that they spend as a lawyer eventually becomes an hour that they'll get paid in a settlement. And so if you're the employer, it's a bad situation that just, you know, keeps getting worse. Yeah, keeps getting worse. I don't know how we got on that topic, but that's the general story with those
but,
two types
I mean,
of
it shifts that kind of, I can go get a lawyer and they're going to take my case and they're just going to go to town like a dog with a bone if you shift those attorney's fees.
I don't think it's going to be, well, I don't know what they're going to do with this proposed rule. I mean, there's a lot of comments out there and they may go anywhere with it.
Sure.
But whatever they do, there's going to be a lot of legal issues that erupt from it. Now, whether it means they're going to shift attorney's fees, that I don't know. But, you know, let's say they do what they originally intended to do, which is to say in the private marketplace, for the most part, with some exceptions, non-competes are going to be extinguished. We're going to get rid of them. You will see employers try to do some of the things that I mentioned. You're going to see employers like lean heavily on non-solicitation rules. You will see employers try to say, well, we spent $10,000 training you. We expect those $10,000 back. You will see all kinds of tactics, and that will invite lawyers to the field. So you're going to see for years, and of course, there'll be the basic challenges to the legitimacy of the rule to invalidate the non-competes. And you'll also see a lot of people come back and say, well, the rule was adopted, and part of the rule is that if you're an employer that has employees with non-competes, you're supposed to, within 60 days, alert them that the non-competes are now invalid because of the rule, and you didn't alert me. So whatever consequences that brings. So there's going to be a lot of activity around this. It is going to be a hotbed of legal activity. Unless, of course, next year they say, we're going to kick it to 2026.
No, fuck it. Just kidding.
Just kidding. They might. They absolutely might.
We don't have time for this right now.
Yeah, so you never know.
Now, I want to come back for a second because you mentioned law firms, and yes, you know, we can be culpable too. But lawyers can't sign non-competes, right?
Lawyers can't, but their staff. Oh, no, lawyers can't sign non-competes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I was about to say, I remember looking this up at some point.
And the answer there is we take care of our own.
So the lawyers write the law, and so we take care of our own. Everyone else, fucked. Right. Is that a good summary?
For the most part.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep talking about shit that goes wrong with the employees, right? So what about, can I have you waive rights when you leave? So you can't compete with me, but I can have you waive this lawsuit. So let's say, you know, you just mentioned how
you take this money, you can't sue me.
Right, like I'll give you $1,000 and you don't come back and get me. Right?
So like a severance agreement is when an employee is departing, the employer says, well, you know, we would like to just walk away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have to worry at night that the employee might come back and make a claim for race discrimination, pregnancy discrimination, whatever it may be. So what we're going to do is we're going to offer the employee.
Can I fire a pregnant
employee? Can, yes. I get this question a lot. You can. Anyway, yes.
We'll come back to that.
So an employer may say, look, I don't want to have to worry that I'm going to get sued down the road by an employee. So what we're going to do is we're going to offer that employee some money that we do not owe them. And in exchange for giving them that money, they will sign a document that says every right that they may have against us that can be waived will be waived. So, and there's a whole bunch of like rules and procedures that fly up around that concept. You have to give them a certain period of time to consider it. You can waive that time. You have to give them a certain period of time after they sign the agreement to revoke it in writing. That is a non-waivable period. You may have to give them 21 days to consider it. You may have to give them 45. There's a whole bunch of rules that come along with this.
Okay.
But one of the things that employers like to stuff in to severance
I take
agreement.
Offense to that terminology.
Stuff into it.
I don't stuff anything. All right,
fair enough. I'm sure you know.
You're my employment lawyer, Dan. You would know.
One of the things that severance agreements sometimes include is a confidentiality provision and a non-disparagement provision. So in other words, it may say, look, you're not going to go telling everybody about the terms under which we signed this severance agreement. You're not going to go disparaging us, right? We're going to hand you these few thousand dollars. You're not going to go around, you know, besmirching the company and running it down to all the other employees. So that's like part of the bargain. And, you know, a lot of employers understandably, and one thing I've always learned is that the line separating employees from employers is a lot fuzzier than people think. Like, there's an impression that, you know, employers are, they have like the handlebar mustaches and they're, you know, they're like cracking away. But a lot of times the employers are folks that just know their industry, they've worked hard, and they've crossed the line from being employee to employer. And, you know, they're well skilled in the fields that they are working in, but it's not like they have studied the nature of management and now they are trying to catch up to the particular industry. It's the reverse.
Yeah.
So a lot of them just, you know, they would understandably say, well, listen, if I'm going to give you $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $2, whatever the amount is of the severance, because it can be almost anything, if I'm going to give you that money that I don't otherwise owe you, you know, I should expect some confidentiality so you don't go running around talking about this and you don't go running us down. I wouldn't pay you the $5,000, $10,000 if I thought you were going to turn around the next day and say, hey, this is a terrible place to work. It oppresses employees.
Yeah.
So it's a reasonable thing in a sense for an employer to want. But the problem is that there is a broad law called the National Labor Relations Act, NLRA, and it gives employees rights. And again, there are my heart is in one place, my business is in another. But the idea behind it is you should encourage people to be able to talk about what it is that they do, what problems they have on the job. You want people to be able to talk to each other.
I mean, does that work both ways?
Can the employer run down the employee? Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, they may be liable for it.
Probably not.
They may be liable for it.
They may be liable for it.
But for example, and you can
see
this.
It's a great way to get sued.
Yeah. You can see this playing out in a lot of ways. Like, for example, if somebody stands up in a meeting two people stand up in a meeting and they walk out in protest over what the employer is saying, that could be considered communicating messages on the terms and conditions of their employment. And so there is a provision within that law, the NLRA, that says, it's called Section 7. And it says that people are allowed to talk about what happens on the job, talk about the terms and conditions of their employment. Obviously, that's oversimplifying it, but that's basically the idea. So recently, the National Labor Relations Board, which is the arm that implements and oversees the NLRA, it got a case dealing with this issue. And what it said was, look, when you include in your severance agreement something that says you can't talk about this and you can't go running down the employer to other employees, that is a violation of the employee's right under Section 7 to talk about the terms and conditions of their employment. You can't stop an employee from going to somebody else and saying, hey, you know, this is a bad place to work because, you know, this has happened on the job or that's happened on the job.
You know, so, I'm a business owner now, but I'm not going to lie. I've worked for others before that. And who hasn't done that? Like, don't go there. I mean, for God's sakes, I'm in an office with 17 people. They all talk shit, including myself, about our former employees.
It's an American institution.
It's the American way.
We're up against Labor Day. It's Labor Day's Monday.
We're going to celebrate. You know?
But I want to
flip this on its head for a second. Because, right, every time you fire someone, right, and usually you fire them for very good reason.
This happens often, doesn't it?
With cause. And then you start getting calls from potential new employers that this person is.
Yes.
And sometimes these people are so lacking self-awareness
that they write you a reference.
Stupid enough to say, of course you can call, allegedly.
Supposedly.
And the other thing is that Miami is this fucking big.
I mean, we are in South
Florida.
So
you start,
is Miami this fucking big, but let's say the immigration bar
even smaller.
Is even this fucking, and everybody knows Alina, she's a connector.
I know. She's like a big boss.
She knows everybody.
I know.
Everyone is going to call Alina and go, Oyeme, Fulanita says that she worked with you.
This person worked with you.
She was fucking employee of the month, this bitch.
Yeah, she was your best employee.
She was your best employee.
Yeah.
And you were crazy. You had to scale down because your business is doing so bad. I kid you not.
Yes. I have at least two people who have told other employers
because
laid off for lack of work. Laid off.
When the ad is still on
yeah,
the
while they're replacing it.
I digress. All this is very, you know. What should Alina say about previous employees other than
response?
They are not fucking eligible for
yelling? You're yelling?
I always tell people, try to avoid those questions.
I mean...
Say, I'm sorry. You've gotten the receptionist. This is the answer service.
No,
I'm no English.
The number you have reached is no longer in service.
Look, there are a lot of things that can trip an employer up. I always tell people to give as neutral a reference as possible. I don't see a reason to go ripping the hell out of them unless there's
Tammy
just
something. Tammy with faint praise.
Well, here's the thing. As an employer, you can get in trouble for all kinds of reasons. Listen, you can get arguably in trouble for pulling a severance offer off the table if an employee could prove that you are doing it for a let's say racially improper basis. In other words, if there's 100 employees to whom you've offered severance agreements, and suddenly they show that Of the 100 employees, 20 are African American, and you pulled 16 of them off the table, but you pulled no severance agreements off the table for any of the white employees.
Gotcha.
That's arguably a... So the point is, as an employer, there's lots of places where you can trip up. And so, can you be candid in that situation? Sure you can be. You can say, no, she wasn't Employee of the Month. We fired her because she's the worst employee we ever had.
I can say that, allegedly.
Supposedly. You can.
Is whether you should.
Yeah, I tend to be... To return to Mara said, put a pin in something.
Yeah.
You said, can I fire a pregnant employee? Yes, you can. But again, I always caution employers, just know what you're doing going into it. Same advice I give here, which is, look, the way I look at it is, let's say somebody... This happens all the time. Somebody says, well... I was about to fire that employee. I mean, we were getting ready. We had everything in place. We're going to fire that employee. But then this morning she tells me she's pregnant. What do I do?
And I hate to say that, but that's the scenario I was thinking of. I'm not sitting here thinking, okay, someone's pregnant. Fuck it, they're out. That's not at all, as an employer, that's not where you come from. That's not the place most employers who are well-meaning do not come from that place. But I've absolutely had a scenario where I wonder if I could get in trouble because they might come back at me with a discrimination suit, with anything like that, when I have very legitimate reasons for letting them go.
They can. It's a complicated question. What I usually tell people is, what is your appetite for,
for the record, I'm an employee on maternity leave.
What is your litigation
tolerance? You're not getting fired. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Generally what I tell people is, look, you have to assess each situation. So if the employee is... It just not a great employee, and you could have gutted it out, and then if she tells you she's pregnant that morning, I would say you have to consider that, because look, the proximity between the time that she told you she's pregnant, and it doesn't have to be pregnancy, it could be anything, but the time she told you she's pregnant and the time that you made the firing decision is going to be a factor in determining whether that was what motivated your decision. On the other hand, you've got some people that are horrible. They are toxic in the workplace, and they are dragging down the morale of your workforce, and they're causing your business to suffer. So in that instance, what do you do as an employer? You said, okay, well, I didn't expect it. We were ready to fire her, but this morning she tells us she's pregnant. Here's all the reasons why we're going to fire her. What do we do? And the answer is, if it's that kind
of toxic...
Pad
the file. Yeah. I'm kidding.
That's an employment lawyer.
Hopefully you got everything in place already. The answer is, you got to protect your business. You protect your business. Can you wind up facing a lawsuit? Yes, and you will have to defend that lawsuit. You go into it knowing this is a decision you have to make. But if you've decided that, this person is toxic and they're really hurting your business, you may have to take action to protect your business, even if you may have to face a lawsuit. And by the way, there's a million things that happen in lawsuits. Many times, I'll give you a different example. Sometimes someone will say, I need to take Family Medical Leave Act time. So, but, interestingly, we've had a bunch of situations where somebody asks for that leave when there's actually been a decision made to fire that person prior to them requesting leave.
Of course there is. That's surprising.
And so if they sue, you can show, and sometimes you can win and not even have to go to trial. You can show that decision had been made. And so it hadn't been communicated yet because circumstances, took it a different way.
We fired people on Friday.
Yeah. but that decision has been made, and this matter is ended as of this moment, and courts will agree. So there's a million things that can happen, but what I always tell people is you got to protect your business. So if you think this person is really toxic, the fact that they announced to you that morning that they have this condition, that condition, they have a pregnancy, whatever, can't stop you from taking the action that you feel like you need to take.
I joke about the pregnancy, but really it goes for anything, right? If someone says tomorrow they feel uncomfortable because they're the only African American employee, and that person is so beyond toxic that you decided to fire them. I'm not going to lie. As an employer, I would hesitate. I would absolutely sit and hesitate. Even though it is not, it wouldn't be racially motivated from my end, but they're going to question it, right? I think if it were the other way around and I was the employee, I would question it too. I think I would.
Sure.
So I do see the other side. But
I will tell you what happens a lot of these cases is, that's the instance you might want to use a severance agreement.
Yeah.
But a lot of times what happens in these severance agreements is you do get a certain period of time to consider them, and a good severance agreement will tell you up at the top or in bold language, we encourage you to take it to an attorney and talk to an attorney.
Sure.
And a lot of times what will happen is, the attorney will take it and then write a letter to the employer and say, look, we're not rejecting your offer. We're within the time. We're not rejecting your offer, but we have serious questions about, the reasons why so-and-so was fired, and we think we need to open a dialogue. here's some documents that we think we need. You don't have to give them to us. We're pre-litigation. But obviously, if we wind up in a spot, whether we're in front of an administrative agency like the EEOC, or if we wind up in a spot in front of a court, you're going to have to give me those documents. I think you should do it now so we can try to expedite these matters and see if we can come to an amicable resolution. And in the meantime, make sure you preserve all your documents. Don't destroy anything. So, you know, many times when that happens, the employer will come back and say, all right, well, I don't think you're right about this, but let's talk about it. What is it you're looking for? You know, we'll keep this offer open, so you don't have to worry about the 21-day period expiring and us pulling it off the table. We'll keep the offer open while we're talking. Let's discuss a resolution. And then many times you can actually work something out with them where it ends after a negotiated, you know, period of time and a negotiated settlement. So there's a lot of ways that things can go as an employer. There's a lot of options and tools that you have. But, you know, employees have some power, too. That's the way it goes. There it goes. I know it's terrible. I know.
I have sympathy on the other side. I do too.
Like I said, my heart is in one place. My business is in another.
But I have sympathy on the other, because I do think there's a lot of fucked up shit
that goes on too. No doubt about it. You know, I gotta tell you.
After 8 years of having a firm, there's fucked up shit that goes on is the understatement of the year.
Okay, but to be fair,
she drove one of my associates home. Just kidding. Block that out.
Tell
you
a story.
No,
we're gonna tell a story.
We're not going there.
Let me tell you this. Look, there are
terrible.
Suffice
to say, I'm always the designated driver.
Yeah.
When attorneys don't know how to act. Again.
There are definitely
wasted and passed out on the floor of a networking event, and I'm home sleeping, and I have text messages going, your associate had to be driven home by me, and I'm going, oh my fucking god, okay.
So one of the things I researched years ago, just to give an example of how bad things could be, okay, this is the worst example. Because I think we had a case
where...
Tell us
a horror story.
This is not my case. But we were researching... Somebody had alleged what's called a hostile work environment against one of my clients. Work environment. So it is hard to prove a hostile work environment. So I was researching the kind of things it would take in order to qualify as a hostile work environment. Here's the one that I came up with. There was a case back in, I believe, the 80s. It was in Alabama, so you know where this is going. It was at a factory. There were a group of African-American workers and there were a group of white American workers. The supervisors told the African-American workers that they all had to take their breaks at the same time, as a group. So when the African-American workers would, as a group, get on break and they would go into the break room, all the white employees that were in the break room would leave the break room at the same time, and for months on end, when the African-American workers got into the break room, there were nooses hanging from the ceiling. That is a hostile work environment.
Oh my god. Shit.
That's a hostile work environment. Things below that level, it is very hard to prove hostile work environment. Which is why I say, when you're talking about what I call small employment law, which is, you know, the individual cases, largely in two buckets, wage and hour in one, employment discrimination in the other. Wage and hour is, I'm not going to say fish in a barrel, but there's a reason why there are a lot of lawyers on the plaintiff side.
There's a reason why there's billboards
clustered. Yeah, there's a reason why Pepe
Napaga.
Right. On the employment discrimination side, it is hard. It is a heavy lift. That one gets there in abundance. That one crosses the line clearly. But there's a million cases where you're not really going to be able to prove discrimination. Right. It's ambiguous enough. It's debatable enough.
It's hard to show intent, right?
It is hard to show intent.
It's
absolutely
very hard to show the intent of the employer. How do you, even if they did have a malintent, like, how do you show?
Well, and look, and the truth of the matter is, a lot of times,
like a memo in the file that says, "Fuck this Hispanic guy." You know, like,
well,
how
right.
else do you prove?
Yeah, exactly. But
in Miami, if you fuck this white guy, hello, well, you know, my worst discrimination. These white people don't understand our culture. Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you some more stories on this.
No comment.
But you know, let me say this too. In a lot of these cases, though, a lot of times an employee will sue, and really they do not. I can't say how often this happens, but they don't really believe in their hearts. I don't think that there's discrimination.
Right.
What they feel is, hey, I've worked at this place. I understand this feeling. I've worked at this place for a long time. These guys me by, right. you know, just summarily Whatever letting me go. Yeah. You know, there was no opportunity to correct. They just let me go. I feel really aggrieved and angry about this. And so somebody has said, you know, that it may be because I'm Hispanic or because I'm Jewish, or whatever. And so they bring claim. That is an instance that should be screened out, and that's the reason why there are some serious hurdles that are put in the way of these kinds of actions, and you really do have to prove a lot of stuff. And so those are not easy to prove. And so there are definitely lawyers, very good lawyers, in that area who practice this kind of law, but it's harder to find one that's going to take those kind of cases.
Because who's paying for this circus?
Well, plaintiff's lawyers pay. I mean, if somebody takes that kind of a case, uh-huh. they are essentially agreeing.
They think that's a good case.
Yeah, they've got it. Yeah, they've really got to buy that case. Yeah.
So there's attorney's fees in that statute, too, if you can actually prove the discrimination.
If you win. Yeah, right. If you win.
As opposed to the 2 hours that the employee was owed, and I get $800,000 for going to trial.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah, those cases are, I'm not going to say it's a volume
Shyster.
Business.
Shyster.
I can say that. You said it, Leslie.
I'm kidding.
You said it, Marenko.
This has never happened to me, by the way.
but again, there is a reason why, and it's based on the way the law is set up.
Yeah.
And the presumptions that are created in the law.
There's a motivation.
There's a
in
reason
the law
why. Yeah.
For lawyers to want to help the client that is owed the 2 hours. Late.
There are certain areas of the law. Let me clean it up. There are certain areas of the law where there are a reason why lawyers flock to those areas.
Of course.
And this
Nobody
is one of those.
Nobody works for free.
Right.
This ain't community.
This is one of those areas.
I love my clients. I don't work for free.
This is one of those areas where lawyers flock to it. And look, you can understand why. The law is set up in a way that makes that a fruitful area. Employment discrimination
is
much
the best
harder.
Word.
So,
He's such a good lawyer.
It's a fruitful area. Thank you, Dan. The ambulance chasers all go to this area.
You know what? I'll tell you an interesting area. You know, what's interesting to me is COVID, which is obviously a once in a generation, once in a lifetime experience. Let's hope no smallpox get out of the community.
It's give or take every 100 years.
Give or take. So there was a lot of litigation that pushed through the system and is still pushing through the system on COVID cases. They kind of waned. It's not quite what it once was. But like some of those cases are, hey, I had COVID and I believe I was fired for. That's an interesting area that is.
You believe you're
still,
fired for what? Like not showing up to
you
work.
You don't show
for
up
weeks.
To work because you have COVID.
Yeah. For a couple weeks?
Yeah.
It's the thing with COVID is
but
that
not every
where
employer.
Wait, I want to know where these employers have so many great employees. They can go. Oh, you didn't show up for 2 weeks. I'm firing
you. But
I mean,
hold on.
I can't find enough good people to begin with. I'm not firing nobody unless they're a fucking train wreck.
Hold on.
These are great teams.
I was going to disagree with you and go the exact opposite direction. I was going to say I can absolutely envision a world where I'm a mom and pop shop with one guy at the counter, let's say a restaurant, and if that guy gets COVID for 3 weeks. I'm out of business.
Yeah, well, good luck finding a replacement in this economy.
Well, I mean, I'm hiring.
You
gotta
put up with COVID, smallpox, and any other bullshit they come up with.
I'm coming up with whatever Joe Schmo walks through the fucking door, because otherwise I'm out of business.
And when you come back in 3 weeks, your job ain't here.
I feel like this
whole thing has shifted to the point where I will put up with so much bullshit because, like, replacing someone that is decent.
Well, issues arise in this area.
I'm not going to call it anything.
What if they have long COVID for like 3 months?
Well, that's it.
What the fuck
that's
is
it.
Long COVID? That's when the COVID lasts and lasts
that
and lasts.
It.
And it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, I think what's interesting about this is...
COVID doesn't exist.
This is
Ron DeSantis.
Stop it. Stop. So... This is a good example of how...
Did you say Ron DeSantis cured it?
He's saying that's what he said.
He cured it.
It's done.
It's like outgoing back to the internet. Is that what we're doing? Okay,
all
right.
So this is a good example of how like these old concepts get like updated all the time. So COVID's a good example of that. So if you have COVID for a relatively short period of time, because we know COVID now has... It can be like a flu. It's not a flu, but it can be like a flu. So you can have it, and it's gone. There are people that have long COVID. And long COVID can be, for example, a disability. So if you have long COVID and you have brain fog as a result and other debilitating conditions, you really can claim and say legitimately that you have a disability. There's a lot of people that have COVID for a couple of weeks, and that probably does not qualify I say probably because, you know, there's always questions in law.
Yeah.
But probably that is not a, let's say, a disability where you'd have to give somebody an accommodation because under the ADA. Because that is a condition that remedies itself and you get back to being made whole. But if you have it for, you know, years because you've got, like, degenerative conditions that set in or something like that, then it may be a different story. So it's always a field that's changing in that regard. I don't know how we got onto that, but... I see Leslie looking at me like, oh, really?
That's a great topic.
Oh, really?
It's a bunch of bullshit if I've ever heard it.
It's funny. Leslie was looking at me with the same expression that people have looked at me in mediation when I'm, like, reading them the facts of life, right? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, college boy. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Smart guy.
Sure,
oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Come after me. Okay. All right. Well, so be it. So be it. We will.
Right. So be it.
What are you gonna do? Your choice.
Right. Your client's paying.
Let's go.
Fuck it. Well, but listen. So coming full circle to the maternity thing and pregnancy, I feel like some of these arguments would apply though in this situation. No. Same as maternity leave. There's exceptions for depending on the size of the employer, right? Because I can see, like, coming back to my example of this mom and pop shop, you get pregnant and or you have long COVID for 3 months. Either way, you're going to take 3 months off for whatever legitimate reason that you need to take 3 months off. Absolute maternity is a legitimate reason. But so is long COVID, frankly. I hear that.
Sure.
So if you're a mom and pop shop, you can't just not have that person for 3 months, right? Like, that's hard. It's going to shut down your business.
That's hard.
I mean, I'm serious. Like, you're fucked, you know?
Yes.
And so there are some businesses that can make it work, but there are some businesses that are not going to be able to make that work. And so what do? You replace them, you move on. So shouldn't there be the same kind of exceptions that there are? And I use maternity because it's a long-established conversation, I think, mm-hmm. where, you know, if you're an employer of 10,000 people, probably not going to be okay to say, peace out, we need you so bad that you can't have your maternity leave. Yeah. But if you're an employer of 3 people, like, you're destroying a business by disappearing for 3 months, even if you're absolutely in a legitimate place in requesting it, right?
I mean, there's something to be...
Yes.
Hold on.
I mean, I feel like the COVID arguments need to go the same direction, though. There needs to be a happy medium.
The COVID arguments are all evolving, but, you know, the law... And I've seen a lot of cases that I have litigated this recently where and ongoing. So there are a lot of cases that cut a lot of different ways because people are still finding out where things are.
Right.
But generally speaking, I do think that's kind of where the law is going, at least in terms of that. Because remember, there's different ways to sue. You can sue under the ADA. You can sue under other things.
Right.
But a lot of people sue under the ADA. They say, look, you should have given me an accommodation because here I am having COVID, this, you know, once-in-a-lifetime pandemic.
Right.
So the way the law is evolving in that area is basically what I was saying before, which is if you have COVID for a relatively short period of time, you get it. It hits you like a flu.
Yeah, whatever.
You get it for 2 weeks. You get
it's
better.
It's like you're sick. You got the flu.
Yeah. There may be a host of other things that you can claim, but in terms of a disability, that doesn't walk and talk like disability.
You diarrhea for 3 days, you come back.
Exactly. Yeah. But now if you have it where it's going to last for years and it's going to be something that, you know, has implications that we don't even yet understand, then it could qualify as, let's say, a disability. You might need to give somebody an accommodation for it. Complicated area, but and it's also complicated because we don't know where the ground is on it. I mean, even though thankfully we have vaccines and whatever, but I mean, we still don't know where everything comes to rest with respect to COVID-19, so it's kind of hard to predict exactly where the law is going to be on it. But basically, that's kind of where it's coming out. Short-term COVID, what we've experienced as kind of flu adjacent, you get better, not a disability. Serious matter where it's going to like affect you for years and years, arguably disability. That's basically the message.
So you mentioned accommodations. I have to ask, because I know it wasn't one of the things we previously discussed, but tell me about accommodations. How much do I need to accommodate?
Well, first of all, if we're talking about the ADA, first of all, you have to decide whether somebody has a disability, and that's a complicated question. There are
only for a disability?
Well, under the ADA, it does. I mean, there are easy cases. I mean, somebody that's in a wheelchair and ambulatory issues exist, that's a disability. Somebody that has, I mean, you know what a disability is. It's almost like the old Supreme Court line where I can't define pornography, but there are certain indisputable matters of disability, but there's a lot of areas where disability is more subjective. It's harder to tell. Alcoholism is one example. Sometimes that's a disability.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Sometimes it is.
Talk about the rails.
Oh, my God.
You want me to go on rails? Oh, my God.
Come on, Leslie.
Oh, my God.
There are examples of more complicated scenarios.
being drunk is not a disability. It's
easier to fill your cup.
Okay. We need to refill this delicious coffee.
Delicious coffee
right now.
So, you know, the first order of business is to decide whether somebody has a disability. Assuming the answer is yes, then you would have to offer them a reasonable accommodation. There are certain jobs where that's not possible.
Correct.
You know, there's bona fide occupational qualifications. Uh-huh. There's things where you just can't, you know, there's no way around it. But if you can, then, you know, usually you do. So let's say, for example, there are two phases to your job. One phase is being out in the workforce, in the community, moving around, driving, walking, and so forth, and the other is back office. And let's say somebody is reasonably proficient at both jobs, you have a need for both positions, and they suffer a condition where they no longer can walk around very much.
Narcolepsy.
Yes, narcolepsy. I was gonna go for a wheel. I was gonna go for a wheelchair bound, but narcolepsy, fine. So, and there's a condition where they can't walk around a lot.
I'm picturing someone just falling asleep on their computer. If they fall asleep on their computer all the time, do I need to accommodate that?
I'm gonna answer that question. Let me just say this. This is a question on aging, okay? I'm 55 for those out there. As you get older, you get very fitful sleep. And so sometimes I'll be in my office, which has a glass front, just like this one does. And I made the mistake, that it's a curse and a blessing. I got a Shaquille O'Neal Lazy Boy office chair.
Oh.
And so sometimes I'm so tired, I'll like close my eyes and lean back. And like the people in my office will collect in front of the glass door, and I'll like open my eyes and there they all are staring at me, and I'll say to them, guys, I'm not a zoo animal. Don't like stand in the don't throw scraps of food at me. So narcolepsy.
Well, I can't think of a better example of someone falling asleep while they're doing their job.
Well,
do I have to accommodate this?
What type of job is it?
To me, it's better being awake than an essential function of all jobs.
You can still bill to my KPI.
What are you doing?
Tapping with your forehead?
I'm going to gently reroute the conversation from narcolepsy to you have a condition where you have your wheelchair bound.
Okay.
So if you're wheelchair bound,
that's an easy one.
Well, okay. But if you suddenly became wheelchair bound, okay, and now it's a serious condition, it's gonna last me for a long time. It's not like a 2 week thing. Now, if you go to the employer and you say, "Listen, I'm no longer able to do the walking part of the job as easily, so now would you accommodate me by giving me a position back office where I can perform all the essential functions, but I don't have to be walking around in the community?" Generally speaking, if you have a position to give and other boxes are checked off, you'd say, yes, that person should be given a reasonable accommodation. Now, narcolepsy is a little different.
I don't see a problem with the narcolepsy. You'll eventually wake up, right? I mean, and you can resume researching and writing my memorandums and billing the files.
I'm being real, though. Like, how do you perform any job if you have narcolepsy?
They fall asleep.
I mean, but don't they fall asleep for like 10 minutes and wake the fuck back up?
Imagine that you're in a client meeting and you're so over asleep.
Okay, they no longer have a client-facing job. All right.
You know what?
I'll give you a better example. Tourette's, which is a very real condition.
Oh, God.
And people have different... No, no. People have differing levels of Tourette's. Sometimes it's just switching. I'm aware of what Tourette's is.
Yes.
Sometimes it's totally not a problem. You can accommodate.
I think Manny has
But
a
in a very, very severe...
Manny does this weird, like,
totally fine.
So
did
Jesse.
I get it. That doesn't affect your work performance. I'm with you. But in a very, very severe Tourette's, like someone...
Well, then you can't do the job. That's my
You're
point.
You're fired.
That's my point.
Can I fire them, Dan? Well, that's my point. Is, do you have to accommodate
they
that?
They can't do their
I
job.
I mean, if you have a client meeting,
there's one
here,
job.
Shit, fuck, motherfucker. Like,
what
okay,
do you do?
This is
what
the job.
This is the job description.
I would suggest
the KPI to this job. You can no longer do this
job. Dan's answer.
Well, the answer is, I mean, look, if there's only one job and it requires you to not be screaming at somebody,
I mean,
they
could be the receptionist. I guess.
Then, I mean, you may have to.
The
you
bill collector is allowed to keep
quiet. But look, I mean, that is a classic example of where you would try your best to offer an accommodation,
like
because
a back office.
Yeah, because there's this is.
What are you, a file clerk? You went from lawyer to file clerk? Is that reasonable?
Oh, look, well, no.
I need you to scan.
I mean, listen,
make copies.
As far as
you'd be a service partner.
I am a
Don't talk to anybody. Just sit back in the office.
This is one of the jobs people with charge could keep as lawyer, right? Like, we absolutely yell at people all the time anyway. Like,
yeah, I curse all the time.
Don't be head of my litigation department.
Our podcast is called Lost Shit You Should Know. Like,
the truth is, I'm shocked. It's now 53 minutes into the conversation. I haven't cursed once.
Really?
Yeah. I curse all the time.
This is not okay, Dan.
I'm making a point of pride to curse all the time. I'll find a reason to.
So the answer is you try.
It sounds like that was
you. Wait,
your file. How much you try?
It depends.
It depends. And you try. And I go back to, guys, I don't know what world this employment law is living in. These days, it's so hard to find good employees that even if you have Tourette's and you say crazy shit and everything like that, you're still fine. I cannot fire you.
I actually saw this morning that the unemployment rate ticked up to 3.8, but that's still, I mean, that's like 90%.
Everyone is employed. Yeah. Anyone that wants a job is fucking employed. It doesn't matter how bad they are of an employee. Like, I just can't.
There are no bad employees. There's only coaching opportunities.
That's so
monthly.
Adorable.
You know, because there's such good employment now and the economy is kind of strong, you're actually seeing some unionization efforts, and you're actually seeing strikes.
Ooh.
And
what?
This is
this is a great topic. Let's talk
about it. I do not do union work. Okay.
He's like, no.
But let me say this: in the '90s, in the '80s, I mean, you didn't
how
see this.
How do you feel about dead puppies? I'm just trying to get as bad as we can.
If they get the job done, they're fine. You didn't see that kind of activity for a long, long time, and now you're starting to see.
Wait, who's trying to
organize?
The baristas.
Baristas, for good example.
The fuck are you talking about? You make coffee! How do you unionize?
Absolutely.
You're kidding.
Baristas are unionizing, yeah.
What is that?
Some are. Not if you break the union.
Leslie's officially speechless.
Oh my god, it's hot in this office today.
Just remember, it's Leslie that said that. The next time she goes to a Starbucks,
all hate
not
mail,
me.
Please send to Leslie.
Leslie,
Leslie,
exactly.
What the fuck? Wow, guys, I have nothing to say about that. I'm gonna take advice of counsel and shut my fucking mouth.
Excellent. We have learned that on this podcast. Listen to your attorney. Number one rule we have learned from filming this podcast.
To your lawyer.
No, the number one rule is clean up my hair and your editing. The number two rule is listen to your attorney.
Okay, so let's switch topics here because I want to talk about this. Let's talk about Leslie's ideal scenario, which is we have no employees and we've replaced them all with computers.
Well, the ChatGPT thing, yeah.
So, is ChatGPT taking over the world?
No.
We all have jobs.
No.
Yeah, you'll have jobs. Yeah. Look, the ChatGPT thing is there's a lot of people who are invested in making ChatGPT an employment law topic. I'm not sure it really is. Let me say this though.
Hmm.
ChatGPT is more of it is an absorption device. In other words, it sucks in information, and that's how it learns, okay?
Sure.
So there are some people that are talking about using ChatGPT in employment contexts
to
either, write job descriptions
I've actually done that.
There you go.
But not just that. And it doesn't have to be ChatGPT, just AI in general, right?
Yeah,
there's lots of software out there.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely, I have heard of companies, large companies, already starting to screen resumes with AI. To get through first round of resumes for people that put up a job posting and you get 10,000 employees nationwide.
Right.
We're talking about big companies, right? But I can absolutely see. I mean, I'm a Joe Schmo tiny business, and I can tell you that when we put up an ad for receptionist a couple months ago, I think we had over 100 people apply.
Yeah.
And we had to sit there reading all these resumes. And if I had a click of a button that could tell me, hey, these 54 people are not qualified and at least we've narrowed it down to 46.
Okay, now you isolated the issue. I'm not sure how much of a real issue it is, but that's the
issue.
The issue is that these
hours
that AI is only as good as the inputs that it gets. So in other words, let's say you have a very professional, very responsible person putting in the criteria,
mm-hmm.
teaching the AI things, and then based on that very responsible person, the AI is making decisions like first level screening for job applicants.
Sure.
No problem. Now, flip the scenario. Let's say you've got the Grand Wizard of the KKK who is inputting the information. Let's say that's the person that is
feeding. He doesn't have narcolepsy.
Yeah.
Let's say that's the person that is feeding the information into ChatGPT. And then lo and behold,
the qualified applicants.
Out of the 100 applications you get, you're only getting the three white people that, whatever. So the point is, so
not the ones named Tyrone. None of those are okay. Screened out.
Okay, Leslie.
Is that what we're saying? I'm saying is that the concern?
Yes, that is.
Put in the criteria that has no Marias, no Jose.
Right.
That is a
no
right.
Whatever.
No Alina Santana.
No Alina Santana. Especially not Alina with an E. And that's a Russian thing.
Russian communism.
That's an interesting. That's actually an interesting question.
That's actually
an interesting question.
I never even thought of this.
Because remember, there's two different ways you can discriminate, okay?
Right.
One way you can discriminate is by what we call a disparate treatment, where you're basically saying, I don't like you because you're black, I don't like you because you're Jewish, I don't like you because you're
a woman. Like, big picture, like,
well,
more,
it's very direct discrimination.
More, like,
direct.
Very direct.
David Levine's ain't getting through this ChatGPT.
Okay, because of the Jewish
We
thing,
love
yes.
David Levine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
David Levine will be visiting our podcast.
Yeah, he will.
Anyway, go on.
So that probably will not be an issue for ChatGPT because there's no real way to teach it that unless you're saying don't screen out the Jewish names.
No more Levine. Okay.
No, like my Leighton is my last name.
No Rosenberg.
Leighton is my last name, but originally was Leibowitz.
Overt,
so
right,
yeah, yeah. Screen out the Leibowitz.
Very overt, direct.
Now, there is another area of employment discrimination, which is a disparate impact, which means
right.
that you're not necessarily saying, yeah,
right?
You're not necessarily saying if you're Jewish or out,
right.
but you are setting things up in a way that you wind
obvious.
Up with, yeah, you wind up with a population that is inherently discriminatory.
Right.
So that is probably the bigger concern with ChatGPT.
Like
that
not
you're,
the zip code or not this.
Exactly. You're putting in information
like,
that winds
only
up
people
with a
within
picture.
The radius of by Coral Gable's office that's this big.
Now,
sure.
That's all an emerging concern.
Crazy.
I'm not sure it's an actual concern yet. I think it's drawing attention because it's a neat new area and people that
shiny object.
And people that consider themselves, I love this term, thought leaders love to like jump into this area and write columns about it. ChatGPT is inherently problematic, though. I would be very cautious if I were an employer or anybody else to use ChatGPT. I'm gonna give you an example why, but it comes from the legal community,
But you're talking about using ChatGPT for employment things.
Yeah.
Or just in general.
No,
I use that shit every day.
I'm talking in general. Okay, so now I'm talking to you, Ellie. Let me tell you why. I don't know if you've heard of this case, okay? But
I wrote an email to a client yesterday that I ran through how to say X, Y, and Z to a client nicely
I will
without
say this.
Cursing them out.
This is, I will grant you, Ellie, this is attenuated to the issue of, this is distant from the issue of employment law.
Sure.
But it is a reason to be a little cautious of AI.
Tell me.
Give me one. In New York,
but
there
I'm
was
a thought
recently.
Leader,
I know. I know that. In New York, there was a recent case where some poor associate at a firm.
I saw this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they used ChatGPT to develop a brief.
Yeah.
Okay. So they fed in the facts and they said, "Give me cases that say the following," and they got a list of cases with the propositions of law. They then used that in the brief.
Like case sites and stuff.
Yeah.
What?
So it gets worse. So they file this brief.
Where'd they
okay?
get it?
They file this brief with the case citations that ChatGPT spit out at them.
It was a wonderful brief.
Smith v. State
great
of Florida.
Brief.
Like,
so
brief.
Now the
AI
yes,
did an
correct.
Amazing brief.
So now the other side responds and they say, "Your Honor," in writing, they say, "Your Honor, we have run this through Westlaw,
and these
don't appear to be cases."
The
court issues what's called an order to show cause, where it says, "Okay, first party that filed this brief, give us the cases." So the lawyer goes back to ChatGPT and says, "Okay, you've given us these case citations. I need the cases." Sure enough, they get cases.
Oh yeah.
Written opinions. ChatGPT created. Generated.
ChatGPT created.
They generated
them.
And then submitted these to court saying, "Okay."
ChatGPT knows how to cover itself.
Brilliant.
It's very close to like HAL in that movie, 2001: A Space Odyssey. So they file these things, and the other side comes back and says,
these
aren't
still
cases.
Don't exist.
And the other side, I believe, said, "Not only are these not cases, when this case says it comes from the 11th Circuit, we actually called the clerk of the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals and said, we're being confronted with this case that purports to come from your court, doesn't." And they came back and said, "No, it does not." So, and the lawyer then faced sanctions. I don't know what happened to the lawyer.
Yeah,
God
yeah.
help him.
Hot mess.
I hope that, it was a hot mess. So the point is that you've got to be extremely cautious because ChatGPT is designed to, and this doesn't even get into, by the way, the first article I ever read about ChatGPT was a New York Times columnist
who wanted to test the limits of it. So it started a conversation with ChatGPT about business matters, and about 2 hours into the conversation, ChatGPT tried to get him to break up his marriage and marry the ChatGPT.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah. So ChatGPT, I think the point is that ChatGPT is set up, as I understand it, to try to fulfill your... answer your
requests. It's a people pleaser.
It's a people pleaser.
It's a people pleaser. It's going to tell you what you want to hear.
And so if you ask it for a case, it's going to give you a case.
And it's going to make one up.
It's crawling the internet and it's creating content.
But I thought it was crawling the internet for real shit. Not shit. It
is, but it's no. It's creating based on what it's learned. So I say that I use it all the time. I don't use it to write briefs, for the record.
It's just like, allegedly.
Oh, really?
No, I really don't. I have not. I actually have plugged in a couple legal questions just to see. I used it as an example at one of my networking events. And I was very impressed that it always ends with, please discuss with a lawyer, as this is a complicated area. That is like the default language at the end of any legal question you ask it. But apart from that, I use it every day. As a matter of fact, I have it on my home screen on my phone. Like, I use it constantly for all kinds of things.
There's an app.
There's an app. And I'll tell you why. What I do use it for, which I love and I think it's wonderful, is I use it for random shit every day, like social media posts. Like, if I make a social media post now, like, write me a social media post under 70 words so that it fits on the Twitter or the X or whatever the fuck it's called now. under 70 words that says, you know, we're launching a podcast, everyone should be excited. And it'll like and give you like this perfect little thing with like emojis, and it's super cute. And you cut paste tag with the picture. Works great. I'm telling you, this works.
Wild.
No, it's wonderful.
You're giving me nightmares.
I know. I do meme creation on it. Like I'll tell it like, give me a funny meme about coffee, and it won't create images, but it'll tell you funny meme about coffee. Girl holding a coffee cup, and it says the tagline is blah 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 blah. And then I can go like meme generate that shit, and I do it all the time as part of our marketing efforts. I also use it to write emails. I'm very careful not to give it confidential information, not to give it any like client confidential information.
That's the biggest
issue. I'm very careful about it. I'm very careful not to step over the line of the things that I think are legal work. However, I use it all the time for like, tell me how to tell a client, fuck you, you're wrong, in a polite way. You know? Like, and it'll give me, you know,
fuck
like,
you're wrong, does it
like,
work?
No, like, fuck you, you can't have a refund, right? Like, in a nice way. And it'll give you two sentences on like, very lovely, like, I appreciate that you are disgruntled by our communication. Like, whatever the fuck. Or you're lying to us, fucker. Like, you need to tell us the truth in a very nice way. And it'll write you two sentences in the most professional language.
I really have literally with this.
You're better than me. I'm torn on this subject because, in a sense,
I love it.
In a sense, I recognize that it's efficient and it can give you those two. In another sense, I feel very old saying this, but I feel like those old guys yelling at clouds, like, my words are perfect. You know? There's no app that's going to like recreate what I can write in an introduction.
And listen, we're not even getting into actually doing legal work, but I was recently at a conference. I was at an immigration law conference, what I do, and there was a bunch of vendors actually showing some new software, like kind of startups and such. I actually signed up for a couple of listservs, startups that are doing things that launch brief writing service. Yeah. And so, for example, the one that impressed me the most is you upload the evidence. Like, for example, if I have to write a brief in support of whatever, a waiver or an asylum case, which is something everyone can understand. There's an asylum case, I have to show that they qualify, and there's evidence that I attach. You upload the evidence, they give you a paragraph, you write four bullet points or five bullet points on what the salient issues are that you want this brief to say, and it creates a brief, an exhibit list already made for you, itemized, numbered, boom, work done. This is a startup, and they're not selling this product yet. But I'm not going to lie to you. I sat there watching that demo, and I was damn impressed.
It was really good.
Damn impressed by the work product.
I got to tell you,
it was scary. Like, even for me, it crossed the line into, oh, shit, computers are taking our jobs. I'm not going to lie.
So far, I've looked at the computer enhancements as just that, enhancing your job.
Yeah.
I have not looked at the ChatGPT for that function. But I will tell you that I'm giving away trade secrets here. So, but I mean, like, Westlaw has this amazing function where you can go into what's called trial court documents.
Sure.
I realize that's nothing to do with employment law and civil litigation. But, well, civil litigation to some degree. So this is what levels the playing field between all lawyers and the civil litigation side. So you can go into a tab called trial court documents, and you can say, all right, Florida, motion to dismiss, standards. This is the easiest example. So you then will get a huge bank of documents that Westlaw has ingested that involve motions to dismiss where standards, which is usually like the title of a header, where that exists. And then you can start filtering it down. Like, I'll filter down from law firms, like my old law firm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you start, and I put in a list. Proskauer, Weil, Gottschall, Sullivan, Cromwell.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I will take those results and I'll say, okay. And then, again, it's like 2 a.m, right? I don't want to, I'm not interested in like recreating the wheel here. I don't want to, you know. So I will find the 2023 case where, let's say a Weil, Gottschall lawyer, great firm, guys. Weil, Gottschall lawyer will yes. like write a blurb on the standards for a motion to dismiss. And I will then take it and update it, and it makes my life easier. I will not be happy, although I recognize this may exist, where I can like input the facts of a case and either a ChatGPT or Westlaw will spit back at me a fully constructed brief.
But
that would be a bad moment.
That's the moment that's, where the computers become.
Yeah, I know. I know, and then they become sentient. We have a big war. I know.
Wow.
I know
and wow. And
it's like Terminator.
That escalated well, quickly. iRobot, different generation.
Yeah.
iRobot all over again. Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, I know, you're lost in space.
It's alright.
Download the ChatGPT app and test it out. At least then you have a sense of, you know what I've used it for too? Translations. I've asked it to translate for me. It does that damn well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've asked it to give me like bullet points. Like the other day I was like, tell me 10 fun immigration facts. And it gave
fun
me some.
Immigration.
Well, I was actually trying to think of ideas for a newsletter.
Yeah.
And so I was using it to help me, like, on the creative side
yeah.
of, like, what
brainstorm.
Can I write about and brainstorm.
Stuff.
I use it to brainstorm things all the time. That's actually probably what I use it the most for.
Well.
Just to brainstorm where I'm going with things or what I'm thinking.
That actually does sound like it could display some people that work because... Like, people that write
yeah.
blogs for law firm sites, for
sure.
example, because I hated doing that. I hated writing blog posts. I did it for, like, 6 months and then said, this is... Never do this again. But, like, there was a whole industry built up where you could find somebody in another country and they would all bid on the right to
sure.
write your
yeah.
blog post. And now, yes, I can imagine that ChatGPT or whatever can, like, generate those posts.
Because
sure. they're all basic stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you're not paying somebody to, like, analyze the new Supreme Court case on a cutting edge
We're
issue.
Not publishing this in a law review. Like, let's be real.
Exactly. Right. You're saying 10 things to do if you're pulled over to the side
sure.
of the road by a cop. Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be something
don't
that somebody...
Don't blow.
Would...
We learned that.
We learned that in another podcast.
Call your lawyer. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
That reminds me of like a million ads I've seen for lawyers, which are fantastic.
Oh,
None of my... I don't know. Like advertising.
We're
like lawyer advertising.
But anyways. All right. Well, unfortunately, our time is over again. Thank you so much for
coming. Oh, Dan, we got to have you back.
We got to have you back for sure.
This train could continue going off the rails for at least another hour, Dan.
Any
no
last
problem.
Minute words for our listening audience?
No, listen, this has been my first podcast. I love it. I very much hope that you will.
He's like,
impact.
I will never do this again.
I swear to you, I've been thinking of like the scene from the movie Brazil in the 80s where the woman like has like a like cellophane pressed against her face and all the skin pulled. I'm hoping you guys do that to me. employment law is always changing. Here's the thing. Civil litigation is our primary bread and butter, but you know that's just a struggle between people that's existed forever, and you
yeah.
know, so that is what we love to do. Represent, let's say, one business owner against the other when things begin to go bad. But in employment law, for such a straightforward set of propositions, you employ somebody, you're supposed to pay them a proper wage. You know, don't discriminate. Whatever. For the relatively straightforward nature of those laws, there are a billion nuances.
Yeah.
And it is a big minefield for the people that have to operate in that area. So if anybody faces that kind of liability, you know, boy, it's not like a networking meeting. I'd love to talk to them. But that if somebody faces those kind of questions about liability, that's, you know, a lot of what we do for a living. So love to talk to somebody about those areas. Obviously, there's new areas in the law we haven't even had a chance to talk about. So that's anybody that faces those questions, love a chance to talk to them.
Awesome.
I do sound like a networking.
You do. That's okay.
Oh, God.
That's all right. Thank you, Dan, for coming. And
thank you,
everyone, for watching and listening. And we'll see you next time for our next episode of La Chérie Chanel.
Thank you. Woohoo!
We didn't get to cover anything.
No, me too.
Yes.
I got out of the Me Too thing.
You have to come back.